Well, good evening, everyone. Here, there, and everywhere. Near and far. Good to see you all. This is the last Wednesday of our series on Dogen's text called Continuous Practice that we've spent the whole last month on, and we have yet the weekend to go coming up. And as I look out on the screen there, I'm guessing that just about everybody has been here for at least some of the past month, I hope. Maybe at Wall Street there might be somebody completely new. So I won't review too much at all tonight. Dogen, who founded our school of Zen in Japan, went to China and came back with this particular way of practicing, and then he wrote an amazing amount of material that's been collected in several volumes. And this this text called Continuous Practice was about midway, and I would say, in his teaching career, as I recall. And in it, after the initial introduction, he tells stories of the Indian and Chinese ancestors whose continuous practice inspired him. And for those of you who've been following along, it may begin to seem like Dogen is setting the bar of continuous practice impossibly high. If anybody has actually gone in and read some of the stories, right? An impossibly high standard for us ordinary lay people living in the world with family and work responsibilities. We are not solitary hermits living on a mountainside, much as we might sometimes wish to be. Amongst Dogen's stories of the admirable ancestors, there's Mahakashapa's long list of harsh austerities. We haven't gone into detail, but there's like these 12 extremely harsh practices that he relentlessly did his entire life. And then there's Parshva's practice into extreme old age. My head isn't good for numbers, but he was like 80 already when he was born, and then he lived another 80 years. He spent 80 years in the womb, poor guy. And then there's Hui Neng, who spent years laboring, pounding rice, and Baijiang, who worked in the fields well into his 80s, saying a day without work is a day without food. And there's Yunyan and Dawu, who vowed to sit zazen without lying down for 40 years. Have any of us done that? Are any of us likely to do that? No. Yunju and Qingjing, who became free of self, so free of self-clinging that heavenly beings could not even see them anymore. They were so free of self-clinging, they became invisible. And monks who forage nuts and berries and chestnuts for food. These are the stories that you'll find if you read in detail on this text. Dogen exhorts us to leave behind attachments to family and loved ones, to let go of desire for fame and gain. And this may seem like he's setting up a standard of continuous practice that's completely unrealistic for such as we are. Unreachable here in the midst of urban 21st century life. And yet, if we look closer, we will find all through these stories pearls of wisdom and clarity that give us great encouragement. We just have to make a little effort to translate them into our own vernacular and situations. And we begin to realize that Dogen is not being as literal as perhaps the text sounds. So let's try this passage. Dogen says, "In the continuous practice of the way of Buddha ancestors, do not be concerned about whether you are a great or modest hermit, whether you are brilliant or dull." Well, that sounds like the kind of comparisons we often make in daily life, doesn't it? You probably all know just how pernicious the habit of comparing mind is. It causes us no end of distress. Someone else got the job you wanted, or the acclaim, or the great relationship, or the trip to Europe. Who of us is free of a little bit of green tinge of envy now and then? You begin to feel that you're somehow just not fill in the blank enough. Talented enough, rich enough, good looking enough, smart enough, right? The list is endless. Or on the other hand, you may find yourself subtly looking down on or actively disparaging someone who does not live up to your expectations of how they should be or what they should have accomplished or how they should have done the job. The Buddha taught that all comparison is vanity. Better than, worse than, just as good as, or just as bad as. All is attachment to self. So it can be a very revealing mindfulness practice to just notice whenever that mind of comparison arises, and to notice which of those patterns is being activated. Are you comparing yourself favorably or unfavorably, or insisting that you're just as good or just as bad? And in that practice of just noticing, we already begin to let go. The mind of comparison looses its hold upon us, and we identify less with those comparisons. Dogen continues, "Just forsake name and gain forever, and don't be bound by myriad conditions." So he's saying, look deeply into that conditioned and impermanent nature of the fame and gain that we think we want or wish for, the recognition. Even if we think we have it, it won't last. And then we're cast down at our loss. He continues, "Do not waste the passing time. Brush off the fire on top of your head." Now, I thought this is a curious comment, because in other texts, Dogen says, practice like your head is on fire. So here he's saying, brush off the fire. Practice like your head is on fire is like practice with a kind of life and death urgency. But he's flipping it here. He's saying, don't be too attached to that urgency. Sometimes that's vanity too. Brush off the fire on top of your head. "Do not wait for great enlightenment, as great enlightenment is the tea and rice of daily activity. Do not wish for beyond enlightenment, for beyond enlightenment is a jewel concealed in your hair." Jewel concealed in your hair means it's with you all along. You don't have to reach for beyond enlightenment. "And do not wait for great enlightenment, as enlightenment is the tea and rice of daily activity." There's another Dogen text where tea and rice comes up, called Everyday Activity. And in this text, Dogen tells of Daokai, who asks Master Tozu. Daokai says, "It is said that the thoughts and words of Buddha ancestors are everyday tea and rice. Besides this, are there any words or phrases for teaching?" And Tozu replies, "Tell me, when the emperor issues a decree in his territory, does he depend upon ancient emperors Yu, Tang, Yao, or Shun?" That sounds a little cryptic. But in other words, he's saying, right here and now, do you have to go and research all the words of the Buddha ancestors who said this and who said that? Right here and now. Cook your rice. Make some tea. Drink your tea. The thoughts and words of Buddha ancestors are everyday tea and rice. As Daokai was about to open his mouth to answer, Tozu covered it with his whisk, you know, those white fly whisks, covered his mouth, and said, "While you were thinking, you've already received 30 blows. In other words, while you were stopping to think, you've already blown it." At that, Daokai was enlightened. That's how those stories go. Dogen says, "The thoughts and words of Buddha ancestors are their everyday tea and rice. Ordinary coarse tea and plain rice are Buddha's thoughts, ancestors' phrases. Because Buddha ancestors prepare tea and rice maintain Buddha ancestors." So this is sort of reciprocality between the everyday stuff of our lives and our practice, our words, our expression. And then he says, "Accordingly, they need no powers other than this tea and rice, and they have no need to use powers as Buddha ancestors." It's not about attaining special powers. There's another wonder, one of my favorites. I have so many favorites of Dogen's work, but one is called Miracles. And he sort of pokes fun at those who brag about their special spiritual powers, and, you know, and talks about cooking rice and drinking tea as miracles, everyday miracles. The words and actions of the ancestors are right here and now in our everyday activity. Cooking a meal, serving tea and a cookie to a friend, planting, tending, and harvesting our garden, just like human beings have been doing for millennia. As the famed enlightened Chinese layman Pang said, "Miracles are nothing other than fetching water and carrying firewood." So we could ask ourselves, how are the teachings and practice of the ancestors present in our everyday activity? Next, Dogen says, "If you have a home, leave your home. If you have beloved ones, leave them. If you have fame, abandon it. If you have gain, escape from it. If you have fields, get rid of them. If you have relatives, separate from them. If you don't have name and gain, stay away from them. Why should you not remain free from them, while those who already have name and gain need to give them up? This is the single track of continuous practice." Now that is starting to sound pretty harsh, isn't it? Abandon those you love? Too extreme, even a little scary. But listen. Later he says, "It's not that Buddha ancestors lacked family obligations and attachments." And there are stories. There are stories of Indian and Zen ancestors who went home to take care of their dying mother. You know, there are stories. It's not that they lack family obligations and attachments, but they abandon them It is not that Buddha ancestors were not bound by relationships, but they let them go. And then he says, even if you are bound by relationships, you cannot keep them. If you do not throw away family obligations and attachments, the family obligations and attachments will throw you away. So he's getting at something a little more subtle here. If you want to cherish the family obligations and attachments, then cherish them. To cherish the family obligations and attachments means to be free of them. I think Dogen is posing one of the hardest questions we face as human beings. As social beings, we are creatures of attachment. We need to be able to form healthy connections to our family, our friends, neighbors, colleagues, to live peaceably and cooperatively together. If we don't know how to form healthy relationships, we're in trouble. And to do that, we also need to feel and know when and how to let go. When our child goes off to school for the first time or leaves home to go out on their own. Ultimately, we have to let go of our own life or the life of someone we love dearly. And we can't make decisions for those we love either. Right? We have to let go and trust them to make decisions. There's a lot of letting go involved in being in relationship. We need to deeply understand that we, ourselves, and others are mutable, ever-changing, and not get stuck in labels and fixed views and judgments. Many of us know how constricting and harmful those old family labels can be. Right? The smart one, the stupid one. What are some other examples of family labels that we get stuck in?
Middle child.
Middle child.
Oldest son.
Oldest son.
Troublemaker.
Troublemaker. Anybody on Zoom, just unmute and give us some other possibilities. Oops, we can't hear you. Did somebody say something? Over there at Wall Street. Let's hear some other voices. Maybe we can't. Anyway, I'm sure you all could supply some of those family labels. The artistic one, the talented one, the clumsy one. The pretty one, the not pretty one, you know?
Maybe it's the computer audio.
How they stick. Oh. That's okay. Dogen warns us that if we don't let go of those attachments, they'll let go of us. And this can certainly happen in families, intimate relationships, and workplaces. When people self-expel from that environment, right? The great poet T.S. Eliot pleaded in his poem, Ash Wednesday, teach us to care and not to care. Teach us to sit still. And Mary Oliver, the American poet Mary Oliver, wrote, to live in this world, you must be able to do three things. To love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends on it, and when the time comes to let go, to let it go. How do we do this? Continuous practice. Starting right here in the Zendo, as we face the arising and passing of each breath, each thought, feeling, sensation, we live and die. We meet our life fully and we let go. We let go of our fixed views, our habit patterns, our obsessions, and not with a mind of punishing judgment, but with a sense of patient recognition and kindness. Dogen says, to forsake name and gain in this lifetime and practice one thing thoroughly is the vast, continuous practice of the Buddha's timeless life. This continuous practice is bound to be sustained by continuous practice. Love and respect your body, mind, and self that are engaged in this continuous practice. Love and respect your body, mind, and self that are engaged in this continuous practice. So now we realize that our whole selves, body, mind, and self, are our continuous practice, worthy of love and respect, to be carefully tended even as we let go of self-clinging. Even though Dogen's stories of continuous practice may sound completely daunting by the language and standards of his time, we can find words of great encouragement interspersed among them. Here's another passage I really appreciated. Each day is valuable. 100 years lived in vain is a regrettable passage of time, a remorseful life as a living corpse. But even if you run around as a servant of sound and form, in other words, grasping this and that, for 100 years, if you attain one day of continuous practice, you not only attain the practice of 100 years, but you awaken others for 100 years. The living body of this one day is a living body to revere, a form to revere. If you live for one day merged with the activity of the Buddhas, this one day is considered as excellent as many kalpas of lifetimes. Even when you are uncertain, do not use this one day wastefully. It is a rare treasure to value. Even when you are uncertain. Dogen's saying it's never too late. And even if we live one day, meet one day of our lives fully, it makes a difference. It matters. Not only to us, but to others. And of course we will have times of doubt and discouragement. We will wobble, we will lose our way, make countless mistakes, missteps, and misjudgments. But with the help of our bodhisattva vows, we can reset our compass and continue. With the help of our good companions on the path, who notice when we stumble and reach out a hand. There's a saying that you may have heard that goes, a Zen master's life is one continuous mistake. This is a popular quote, sometimes attributed to Shunryu Suzuki Roshi and sometimes to Dogen Zenji. It's actually a paraphrased version of a passage from Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, and it refers to a phrase used by Dogen Zenji, Shoshaku Jushaku in Japanese, which means, more literally, one mistake after another. Oh. And I really like that version. It feels more accurate to me, and particularly because it leaves space between the mistakes to notice and reset. That's more what our lives are, one mistake after another, with a little space in between. Dogen repeatedly exhorts us not to crave fame and gain. And he gives us examples of ancestors who refused to accept great rewards and gifts. But as I was reading this, I thought, well, fame and gain are two of the eight worldly winds, the eight worldly winds that come in pairs, pleasure and pain, gain and loss, praise and blame, fame and disrepute. We're always craving one and trying to avoid the other, right? So I think when Dogen says, fame and gain, that they stand in also for pleasure and praise, the other of the worldly winds that we reach for. We're continuously blown back and forth, off center, off course, between our desires and aversions by these eight worldly winds. And then Dogen gives us wise advice. He says, if ever you value fame and gain, and we'll add pleasure and praise, then be compassionate to fame and gain. If you are compassionate to fame and gain, you will not allow them to break the body that can become a Buddha ancestor. Being compassionate to family and relatives is also like this. Do not think that fame and gain are phantoms and illusions, but regard them as sentient beings. If you are not compassionate to fame and gain, you will accumulate unwholesome actions. The true eye of study should be like this. So I think what he's saying is don't demonize your delusions. They are part of your humanity. Don't just call them phantoms or illusions. They are part of your humanity and thus deserving of your compassion. And if you just generate hatred towards your delusions, you are feeding the seeds of hatred and aversion. And that will poison your relationships to others as well. Over and over throughout Dogen's work, he tells us that our very delusions are the pivot points to awakening, when we use them to see clearly into the true nature of being, and we use them to let go, to open our eyes. And to me, this is such a radical and inclusive view of practice. And it's continuous, lifelong, always renewed. No mundane, no sublime, no samsara, no nirvana. Just this life in all its messiness and beauty. Eating rice, drinking tea, washing your bowl and cup, giving and receiving. So those of you who are going to be here for the retreat this week, coming weekend, we'll go into a little more depth and read some of these stories in a little more detail and find some more little hidden gems within Dogen. And please feel free, the link is on the retreat page. So if people aren't able to attend the whole retreat, the schedule is there. Feel free to come in even for part of that weekend to connect and be supported for the talks. So what I'd like to invite you all to do, wherever you are, is to consider a few questions and share some reflections with each other. First possibility is, how can you experience continuous practice in your daily life? Mm. Think of an example. Second one, how can you be in relationship without clinging? What does that mean to be in relationship and be able to let go? And third, each of these is a big question. Third, how can you make mistakes, missteps, part of your continuous practice? Okay? Hmm. So you don't have to do all three. Just, you know, pick one or two examples that just seem present for you right now in your practice. Okay? You want me to say them again? How do you experience continuous practice in your daily life? Ordinariness. How can you be in relationship without clinging? How can you be in relationship and practice letting go? And how can you make mistakes part of your continuous practice? Any of those. Okay, so we'll let the folks over there at Wall Street divide themselves up, and also divide the Zoom folks up. And thank you all so much for being here this evening with us.